The date is December 12th, 1986, and we're watching The Three Amigos. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me is the Dusty Bottoms to my lucky day.
Yes, I wanted Dusty Bottoms. Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
Well, I debated, but Ned Niederlander is just the complete wrong character, I think, and his name isn't as fun, even though I don't like comparing you to Chevy Chase because I've heard he's a dick, so...
Yeah, I was gonna say, I was also torn. I like Dusty Bottoms better as a name, but I do not really enjoy Chevy Chase at all as a person.
Yeah.
So...
So this week, we are looking back at December 1986 when the movies in theaters were Heartbreak Ridge, The Golden Child, King Kong Lives, Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, and of course, our movie for today, Three Amigos, which earned $39.2 million on a $25 million budget.
And just to set the context, when this movie came out, I was 5 months old. So, in case you were wondering, there will be spoilers. But if you don't want the movie to be spoiled for you, please hit pause now, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So I guess you didn't see this movie when it first came out at all, then.
No.
The tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, "They're down on their luck and up to their necks in senoritas, margaritas, banditos, and bullets."
I like that one.
But there were no margaritas in the movie, were there? I mean, there was tequila.
Yeah, I guess.
But
it's also that's also like a little bit long for a tagline.
Mm-hmm. But it may not be the best description, so let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
All right, all right, all right. Lucky Day, Ned Niederlander and Dusty Bottoms travel to Mexico with hopes of reigniting their waning careers by reprising the roles that made them famous, the Three Amigos, the greatest lawmen the Old West has ever seen. What they don't know is that this time the outlaws are for real, as they have actually been hired by the people of Santa Poco to save them from the murderous El Guapo. Now, with life imitating art, will the amigos find the cojones to fight like lions against El Guapo and win justice for the people of Santa Poco, or will they die like dogs? Let's find out today on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
Right on. So I joked at the beginning that you didn't see this when you first came out, but I don't believe you've seen this at all, have you?
No, I've never watched this movie. It's actually, I was trying to think of the three actors. So I remember as a kid watching the Chevy Chase, like, late night show and actually liking it.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But
that's a good pull. That's a good pull on your part right
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Chevy Chase's talk show. Wow.
It's so random, but... But then with Steve Martin and Martin Short, I literally think the only thing I can think of Martin Short from is the Santa Claus 3.
I knew you were going to say the Santa Claus, yep.
Yeah, where he's Jack Frost. And uh-huh. I think the only movie, I don't know, I've seen Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. That's where I know Steve Martin.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, other than that, I think the only other movie I've seen Steve Martin in is Cheaper by the Dozen.
Cheaper by the Dozen. Not a Father of the Bride guy.
No, I haven't. Steve Martin is a little bit, he's obviously like before my time,
mm-hmm.
but he's one of those actors, like I've never gone back and really delved into his catalog of work all that much.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he'll come in a few more times before long in this podcast, because I know I've got a few more Steve Martins on my list. For me, this is one of those movies that I loved as a child, and I think back to how you say that you're a sucker for a good fight in a movie. It occurs to me, I'm a sucker for a good musical number.
Mm-hmm.
Or just music in general, because I also think of some of the movies that I loved growing up, where it's things like The Breakfast Club or American Pie. The soundtrack itself is such a huge part of the movie.
Yeah.
And with this one, yeah, I'm just a sucker for My Little Buttercup.
Yeah.
and the blue shadows on the trail, like, it's, you know.
Yeah, this movie was interesting for that. When I was watching it, I wasn't expecting one of my takeaways to be, like, the quality of the music.
Yeah.
And the soundtrack. Like, when I was done it, I was actually thinking, like, oh, I'm going to add this soundtrack to my Spotify library.
Yeah, and those songs are hard to find.
Yeah, I bet.
Well, okay, let's jump into The Three Amigos, directed by John Landis, who, this is now his hat trick with us. We've talked about him with Trading Places and Coming to America. He also directed Animal House, Blues Brothers, Michael Jackson's Thriller video, yada, yada, yada. Produced by George Fulze Jr., who we've also talked about a couple times now with the John Landis connection, because he's produced most of John Landis's stuff. Also produced by Lorne Michaels, who is the man behind Saturday Night Live, Kids in the Hall, plus seems to produce a lot of movies with SNL alumni, go figure, such as Wayne's World, Coneheads, It's Pat, Night at the Roxbury, Stewart Saves His Family, The Ladies' Man, Tommy Boy, a lot of those.
Yeah.
It's written by Steve Martin, who, much like any of the other actors slash writers we've talked about, writes on a lot of the movies he's appeared in, like Pink Panther, Bowfinger, L.A. Story, Roxanne. It's also written by Lorne Michaels, who has writing credits almost exclusively tied to Saturday Night Live, and also written by singer-slash-songwriter-slash-composer Randy Newman, the You've Got a Friend in Me guy. This is his only writing credit, though. I'm not sure how much of the actual script he wrote, or whether the songs he wrote were considered, like, a big enough part of this movie to count as script.
Did he write, like, all the main songs that they sing, other than the Dancing Tree, obviously?
Yeah, well, he does have, two separate writing credits on this movie, and one is for songs by, and then the other is written by. So, like, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's just because of the songs, but it sounds like from that credit that all the songs probably are his.
Okay.
Colin just mentioned the singing bush. He is also the voice of the singing bush. They've heavily modulated him, but that's him singing all those old-time classics. So we open the movie on our three heroes riding horses singing the Three Amigos song. These are Lucky Day, played by Steve Martin, Dusty Bottoms, played by Chevy Chase, and Ned Niederlander, played by Martin Short. I'm not really going to go into any of their credits. I think people probably know at least one other thing. We've mentioned a few of theirs already. During the song, they end up holding that one long note, 14 seconds.
Yeah, I was trying to really figure out I know Martin Short and Steve Martin, obviously they have like a touring act now, do they not, like where they play like banjo music and sing and stuff?
Yeah, they do.
But
yeah.
I never would have really thought of any of them as like exceptional singers. But I thought they actually sound pretty good.
Yeah.
So.
Especially in the campfire scene.
Yeah.
I mean, when that one starts off, you're like, I don't think that's actually Chevy Chase singing.
Yeah.
And then it gets to Steve Martin and Martin Short, and it's like, well, okay, that one sounds like them.
Yeah.
I guess now I can hear Chevy Chase in the other one, but like Chevy Chase is a really good singer in this, if that is him.
Yeah.
So the scene switches to a painting and heroic sounding opening music with credits over these landscape paintings. As the credits end, the painting turns back into a Mexican town, and we're told Mexico 1916. We never do get the town name, though, do we?
I didn't think so. I ended up finding it for the city, for the 60-second synopsis by going, because I was writing and I was like, sure, I must have just missed the town name. And I found Santa Poco on the Wikipedia.
No, but Santa Poco page. Is the town where they come from. They do mention Santa Poco, but this town with the bar in it, this is not Santa Poco.
Oh no, yeah, okay. Sorry, I missed which town you're talking about.
Okay, yeah, but it just says Mexico 1916, so I don't know what town we actually are in. We meet Rodrigo, who has 8 total credits. This was his second last credit. His last one was Boogeyman in 2005. And we also meet Carmen, who is played by Patrice Martinez. She has 12 total credits. And Beetlejuice and 89 episodes of that Zorro series we talked about during Monster Squad, where Duncan Regier plays Zorro.
Yeah.
She's in that. Is Rodrigo her son? Or is this just some village kid?
I don't know. I felt based on... Well, I don't know. At first, the first time I watched it, I felt that he was her son.
Yeah.
But on the second go around, just kind of like the body language and the way he talks to her.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like it could have just been almost like an escort or like a helper.
Yeah. So in this nameless Mexican town, they go into the local bar with Carmen saying, "We will find the men we need in here." And so they're in there. "We're from the village of Santa Poca. We've come here for your help looking for brave men that are brave enough to stand up to the tyrant El Guapo." Well, this is a bust because everyone in this bar is tough, but not brave. So they instead head to the church where there's a silent film screening of the Three Amigos film. Carmen loves the film, and we get introduced to many of the Amigos' catchphrases that'll be important later. Like, "We will not die like dogs, we will fight like lions," or "Our reward is justice has been served," shit like that.
When I was watching that scene, I was trying really hard, especially on the second go-around, to see if I could actually read their lips, to see if they were saying what they were meant to be saying, and I was surprised that they actually were, for the most part.
Yeah, it seems like it.
I found the stage makeup that they're wearing very off-putting in that black and white.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've never watched a silent film before, so I'd imagine that might just be the way it is.
Uh-huh.
But that eyeliner and lipstick was so thick.
Yeah. And I did read somewhere that they ended up using lead-based makeup for them, and it's like, whoa, didn't they know better in 1986?
Yeesh.
So Carmen and Rodrigo decide to send a telegram to Goldsmith Pictures. How sheltered is Carmen that she thinks that the Amigos are real?
I was going to say, I was trying to figure out whether or not that's that should be considered offensive or not.
Yeah.
Whether there's something to the fact that they would just assume, like what does she think is happening? That it's like
is it a documentary? Yeah.
Clearly she's been to a movie theater before. Or, like, understands film. Yeah, I don't know. I was trying to, like, are they just saying, like, oh, like, these Mexican people, they were so stupid that they couldn't understand that it was fake, so.
The only thing I can think of is Mexico 1916 is the key, right? Like, it's a traveling movie theater, so how often does it get into this town?
Mm-hmm.
But they're sending a telegram because they want to hire these heroes to rid the town of El Guapo with a 100,000 peso reward. I took it to the inflation calculator and did some conversions and everything. It's a little over $113,000 that they're offering as a reward.
Nice.
But even though they don't have 100,000 pesos, they are convinced the Amigos will refuse it. Their telegram describes El Guapo as horrible, evil, murdering, villainous, monster El Guapo, and it'll cost them 23 pesos, but they only have 10. So he gives them the 10 peso version, which is just setting up classic misunderstanding because he's editing out key words. And of course sums up all those other descriptors with the word infamous.
The one thing I kind of laughed at with that is when they show you the letter that he's redacting stuff.
Yeah.
It's not like you can't see what was originally written.
Yeah.
Like, you can still see what was there before it was blacked out or whatever. So
yeah,
I feel like he was just giving them the 10 peso letter or whatever for his own sake. Not like he'd already done the work.
Yeah.
If you want to change it, you need to ask for the price up front and, like, then decide how much effort you're going to put in, not put in all the effort and then decide what the price is.
Well, Carmen obviously doesn't seem like the brightest person to begin with, though, if we look at the fact that she's contacting actors.
Yeah.
That that she wouldn't have thought to come in saying, okay, what is it per word?
Yeah.
But it's because of this movie that 10-year-old me knows what the word infamous and what the word plethora mean. Because this movie made me go and look them up.
Nice.
Now we go to Goldsmith Pictures Studio. The studio exec, Mr. Flugelman, played by Joe Mantegna, and his sidekick Sam and Morty, who are played by Phil Hartman and John Lovitz, are upset because the Amigos aren't bankable when they don't do standard Amigos pictures. It's time to get back to the basics. But Lucky, speaking on behalf of them, is trying to make a stand unless they get more money. Instead, they get fired and lose all their perks too, like the studio mansion and even their clothes. But I like the weird assortment of what clothes they choose to take off the Amigos. Like they strip them of their shirts, but they're left with their collar and tie. They're left with their socks and shoes, but, you know, they lose their pants. Like,
Yeah.
So they get kicked off the lot. Lucky says, I know show business, something always turns up, and then we get the perfectly timed arrival of a telegram for the three amigos, and they're reading the misleading, abbreviated telegram, and they're being asked to put on a show. They think El Guapo must be the biggest actor to come out of Mexico. And I love when it's like, infamous. That's what I love about this scene, is the, no, he's more than famous, he's infamous. Classic misunderstanding. So they need to break back into the studio to get their costumes. And Lucky goes first to check the all clear and is trying to get their attention with bird sounds. It seems like it just would have been easier for him to whisper from the top of the wall, you know, hey guys.
Yeah, I guess.
But like this scene dragged on forever. The bird noise is the up here, up here.
Yeah.
But very funny, Steve Martin. They suit up, and the security guards come in, and they swing out of there on ropes.
So that scene where they swing, after they get the costumes, and they swing off?
Yeah.
I was blown away that, like, at the competency of them.
Yeah.
Like, they're actors. Like, I wouldn't have expected them to actually have been able to pull off that maneuver. I was fully watching that, expecting them to just, like, you know, like, do the old...
Hit a wall.
Like, slam into a wall, yeah. Like, flatten, and just kind of, like, slink away.
But, I mean, that's the good thing about it being silent film stars, though, because back then, they would have done a lot of their own stunts, so, like, they actually were trained in this.
Yeah, even the fact that they can, like, jump on the back of horses and stuff,
yeah.
and ride horses without any problem, so...
Yeah. So we go back to the bar in Mexico, some guy in a leather outfit walks in. This is the German, played by Kai Wolf. He has a lot of TV, but since 1999 has been almost exclusively a video game voice actor, except a couple episodes of Power Rangers Time Force.
Oh.
He's looking for El Guapo because he has something he wants. And there's the one guy with the big old mustache harassing him about his pretty little gun. He also sets up some more classic misunderstanding, yeah. by letting the bartender know some men will be coming. You need to tell them to wait for me.
Mm-hmm.
So the German, meanwhile, is still getting harassed by the prick that harassed Carmen earlier, and he wants him to sit on his lap. And so he quick draws and takes out four people in the bar. Anyone else with a comment? Some guys will be coming here, and I hope you give them more respect than you did with me. They aren't as kind. Which is just setting everything up.
Yeah,
I love
it. This movie is very big on foreshadowing.
Yes, very much. He leaves just as the amigos arrive in town, and I like that this bar just has this extra set of tables and chairs kicking around. Like, they have a whole system in place to clear off these dead bodies and bring in new furniture. So the amigos walk into the bar, and everyone goes silent. And they make the understatement of the year of, we're not Mexicans, we're from out of town.
Yeah.
And then and then more classic misunderstanding when Ned says... You know, they find out there's no hotel in town, and Ned says, great, no hotel. I could kill somebody.
There you go.
And the bartender asks if they're the wink, wink, and passes on the message that the German says, wait here. And they order beers, but all they serve is tequila. I think that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner.
This one will be interesting.
Yeah, always on the lookout for product placements in movies. Sadly, this one has no real ones. There are a few fictional ones. So this week, Three Amigos is brought to you by Tequila, Goldsmith Picture Studio, Jorge Martinez Cinema Ambulante, and Cantina del Borracho. And fun fact to any non-Spanish speakers, Cinema Ambulante translates to traveling cinema. And Cantina del Borracho translates to Drunkard's Canteen.
Hmm.
And this has been Sponsorship Corner. So everyone in the bar seems so grim. The three amigos think everyone is just intimidated because they're used to seeing them on the big screen. But I love the layers in this scene of everyone thinking they're the Germans' friends.
Yeah.
So they try to lighten up the mood, and Dusty plays the piano, and they sing My Little Buttercup, and the whole bar is stunned. Man, what a fun scene. This is the musical number for this movie, that's for sure.
Yeah, I liked it. I wasn't expecting it to go the way that it did.
Yeah.
But now that we've gone through all the foreshadowing, I guess I kind of should have. But I thought there was going to be a lot more of them realizing that they were kind of in the shit faster.
Yeah.
And then kind of just like running from the people, basically, and trying to figure stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
More of like a fish out of water type story.
Yeah. They're on the run from the beginning.
Yeah.
So they step outside and see a plane fly by. It's a Tugman 691. And Ned says, I flew one and little Neddy goes to war. It's a mail plane. Didn't you notice it's little balls? Which is the funniest thing in the world to Ned.
I thought it was a good joke. I plan on trying to use it at some point.
I especially liked it when I was 10, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And so we also get a quick scene when the real guys the German was talking about arrive in the bar. And all the badass cowboys are all, hey, look at these two little sissies. And they all get shot up. And the bartender says, this town is getting too rough for me. The bartender, by the way, is played by Fred Asparagus.
Mm-hmm.
He has 31 credits. I didn't pick any of them out. But that is a fucking awesome stage name. Fred Asparagus.
Fred Asparagus, that's a good one. I did notice that the one German, the bigger guy, I recognize him. He played Shao Kahn in Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Uh-huh.
And I think he's also, he's definitely Luke, like the first two episodes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah.
And he's kind of one of those guys, he's always like a bit part in different things and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I actually came across that in my research today, because we don't usually drop what movie we're doing next week, but next week we are doing Mortal Kombat 2, so I'm excited about that because it's the first time I get to see it.
So good. Love it.
And I was doing research, and I came across that guy, and I'm like, he looks familiar. Like, I remember seeing his picture in something that I recently did. And, yeah, I made the Three Amigos connection there.
Yeah.
But Rodrigo sees the amigos come out of the cantina, and so they take them to Santa Poco, all three of them on one donkey. And we get the little kid that says, can I have your watch when you are dead? to Dusty. What did he say?
Yeah.
And then, of course, the lunch with the tacos, and they're honored to have them in their home. And Dusty says, do you have anything besides Mexican food?
Shades of a future reality of Chevy Chase and his cultural insensitivity.
Yeah. Actually, I think about a time that I went to Mexico where someone was like, they only have Mexican food. Where's the American food?
There's like nothing that drives me nuts more whenever I'm traveling when people are like, oh, the food. I can't stand, like, wherever you are, Mexico, if you can't stand Mexican food, then don't go to Mexico. If you can't stand Indian food, maybe don't go to India.
Like, pretty much.
I don't know what you're expecting.
Yeah. So that night, all sharing a bed, the amigos are asking, how does this show work? And Lucky says, well, I was talking to Rodrigo. El Guapo comes in, acts like he owns the place, pretty much what we did in Shooting for Love. And then they all fantasize about what they'll do with their share of the money. Lucky wants a big, shiny silver car. Dusty wants to travel. New York City, Paris. And Ned is going to start a foundation for homeless children. And I love how the other two quickly pivot with, well, obviously that, too.
Ned is just such a sweet boy.
Yeah.
His character is like, for some reason, watching Martin Short in this movie, he gives me shades of Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, a little bit.
For whatever reason. And just, like, he looks so youthful and boyish.
Well, and I read that if he had turned it down, Rick Moranis was the backup.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. But I also love, it seems like Ned has the better solo career out of all of them.
Yeah.
Because he has, like, Little Neddy Goes to War, and they mention another one. And so it doesn't sound like the other guys have anything outside of the Amigos films.
Well, yeah, because later on when they end up meeting the German, like, the German is, like, a huge fan of Ned's.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he knows all his movies and stuff.
Yeah. It would be kind of like the Three Stooges all going, you know, they do their Three Stooges movie, and then, like, Mo has, like, a solo career.
Yeah.
He's out there doing war films.
Yeah.
In the morning, a few of El Guapo's men decide to go rogue and restock their supply of tequila from Santa Poco against El Guapo's orders to stay put. And seeing them coming, Carmen warns the three amigos. And they're like, all ready? Great. Rodriguez said there would be 50 guys. Now there's only 3. They better not cut our money. I love how they, like, you were mentioning earlier how you're surprised they didn't pick up on it faster. And this is one of those cases where it's like, do they think that this is some sort of modern art piece that they're, you know, this performance theater? Like, it's like Tony and Tina's Wedding, if you've ever seen that play, like immersive theater, you know.
Yeah, I was gonna say, wouldn't you have arrived and been like, oh, where's the film crew?
Yeah,
who do I talk to? Who's the director?
Yeah, because even if it's not for a film, there should still be like bleachers set up or something, you know, like, yeah. they could just be paying for a live show, not a film show.
Yeah, like they make the comment about not having a rehearsal.
Yeah,
at one point. But you would have thought, like, yeah, you know, like, oh, well, what time do the lights go up and stuff like that? What time does the curtain open?
Yeah.
Where do we enter from? All these questions that an actor should have.
Pretty much. They go through some of the lines of their movies and then start riding around these three guys shooting their guns in the air. And the bad guys are confused and get run off. And so, you know, it's a nice show. Not bad for a matinee. But everyone in town is excited. Viva Los Amigos! And they're like, they're really starved for entertainment around here. We cut to El Guapo's compound, where we finally get to meet the infamous El Guapo, who is played by Alfonso Arau, or Arau, I don't know, A-R-A-U. He was in Romancing the Stone, several Mexican movies. He was a voice in Coco.
Nice.
The guys are telling El Guapo what happened. What exactly is El Guapo taking a photo of? It's like this... weird Arabian scene?
Yeah, I didn't understand that at all. I thought it was like the Last Supper almost at one point. It was kind of what it looked like, this weird, I don't know, it looked religious to me in a way.
Yeah.
I did want to give credit to the producers of this movie, just in that, I don't know, my sense of the 80s is it was a looser time when it came to like representation.
But the Mexicans are Mexican. Is that where you're going? Yeah.
Well, they're at least Hispanic. There's a few that are like Cuban, mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff. But for the most part, they're all Mexican or of like Latin descent, which I think is something to be commended for.
86, you know, absolutely.
For an era of like when you had Short Circuit, you had a white guy playing a brown guy.
Yep. Yeah, and that was after this movie. So, yeah, no, you are definitely right. Like, good on them for the representation.
And even, actually, like, even with that, the women are actually fairly well done by...
Mm-hmm.
Like, Carmen, I mean, we'll get to it later, but I think it's one of the funniest scenes. But Carmen is not, like, just left to be, the romantic love foil, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she kind of has her own personality and her own goals.
Yeah. Yeah, for as dumb as they portray her in the beginning.
Yeah.
So El Guapo promises they'll return to Santa Poco tomorrow with 50 men. And then we go back to Santa Poco and there's a big festival going on celebrating the banishment of El Guapo's men. So many sparks. How dangerous was the set for that shot? Like, those pinwheels that they have going on, like, they are shooting sparks like mad.
Yeah.
And they're not that high up. And we've got Dusty playing guitar and singing strangely. Lucky doing lasso tricks. And I was watching it, and I'm like, that actually looks like Steve Martin doing it. And then I looked into it a bit more, and he actually learned how to do rope tricks when he was a teenager working at Disneyland.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
You never know what you're going to learn in life that'll serve you later.
Well, yeah, I learned how to juggle years ago, and it came up in a play a few years ago that I did that. I was cast as the strong man in the carnival, and someone else was cast as a juggler, and he had never touched juggling before. And I'm like, well, I know how to juggle. We should just switch. So,
nice.
All the amigos are kind of finding ladies. Dusty has the one woman that says, you could kiss me on the veranda. And he says, no, the lips will be fine. Dusty's probably actually the dumbest of all of them.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
I wonder what he thought of veranda was. I was trying to figure that out. Like, what could he have missed? What could he have misheard or just like misinterpreted?
Yeah. What's the euphemism?
Yeah.
And Ned is telling a story about Dorothy Gish, who I'm like, I'm gonna look that name up. She is a real silent film actress.
Hmm.
So they actually drew from someone of the era to tell this story about the "You Got It, Kid." And he's like, he's got all of these town people like absolutely mesmerized with this story, but like they're probably just sitting there going like, what is he talking about?
I mean, he kind of had me mesmerized with that story. I was going to say, that for whatever reason, that was like peak acting by Martin Short in that scene. It was so emotional.
So the next morning, the amigos are woken by a ringing bell. They're all hungover, but El Guapo himself is coming. And it looks like we've got another show to do. I love the bits here where they tell El Guapo, you know, like, it's a pleasure working with you. And then they're feeding him lines. Tell us to die like dogs. No, we will not die like dogs. And so they start riding in circles and firing their guns in the air. And El Guapo tells his right-hand man, Jefe, I like these guys. They are funny guys. Just kill one of them. Jefe is played by Tony Plana, who I think he's probably one of the more famous out of all the Latino and Mexican and all that sort of thing, Hispanic actors that we have. He has 213 credits.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's in like JFK, Nixon, Primal Fear, The Wonderful Ice Cream Suit. But a lot of people may actually know him as Ugly Betty's dad, which is funny because I don't know if you watch the show Superstore, but he's kind of reprised the role in Superstore because he plays America Ferrera's dad in Superstore as well. So this guy has played her dad twice. But like I know him from things like the newer things like Superstore. Yeah. And I did not recognize him as Jefe at all.
Yeah.
Lucky gets shot. And he gets them to give him his gun. Oh, great. Real bullets. I'll take this.
I thought that scene would have been so much funnier if Steve Martin would have just gone on like a, you could have really hurt somebody. What were you thinking? And gone on like a real, you know, just disappointed dad type lecture.
Yeah. But the gunshot is never addressed again.
Yeah. It's also, it was like enough for him to fall off his horse. Which would have led me to believe that he kind of took it, you know, fairly solidly.
Yeah.
Not just grazed, which means, like, where is the bullet? Is it still in his arm, I feel like?
Yeah. But this is when it dawns on Lucky that this is real. They're going to kill us. What are we doing in Mexico? I've been shot already.
I love how they all just start crying.
Yeah.
They all just start sobbing.
Yeah, and then one of them says, we're not getting paid, that's for sure. So they go over, and on behalf of the three amigos, Mr. Guapo, we are very sorry and would like to go home now. We're movie stars, and they song and dance men. So El Guapo runs them out of town, and the people of Santa Poco were foolish to try to bring men to stop El Guapo. You have hurt me. Jefe, Santa Poco's no longer under my protection. And then they light dynamite, and they've torched the town. And the three amigos come back in the aftermath, and they say, well, we'll just take our things and go. Well, there is nothing of yours here. El Guapo has taken everything, including Carmen. And now all of a sudden, something has changed for Ned. Now he's not just the nice guy anymore.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, he decides, what do we have to go back to? No job, no money, no place to live, no friends, no women, no self-respect. Back home, the three amigos are already dead. And so he draws a line in the sand, literally. And this is one of those scenes where it's like, if you were watching it from another angle, it would just look ridiculous. It's like the Avengers scene that I talked about previously, where it's just like, or the Austin Powers laughing until it's no longer funny. You know, now they're just in the middle of town, drawing a line in the sand and then stepping and facing forward for some reason.
Yeah.
Well, another thing I don't understand here, though, is, you know, Lucky is the first to join him, and he does his gun tricks and reholsters his gun and then goes and joins him on the other side of the line. And then Dusty goes to pull his gun out and accidentally fires off a live round. Why does he have a live round? Like, Ned was loading his gun with new bullets, but Dusty has a live round in there. Why does he have one?
For the sake of the comedy, I guess.
Yeah. So now, like every other John Landis movie we've watched, it's time for the nonsensical part of the movie, starting with the sitting around a campfire eating roasted bat, and they know that they to find El Guapo, they have to go east. And I do love the sight gag where they all point in different directions.
Yeah, I like that.
What they think east is, yeah.
I like that too.
And they go through the desert until they reach the singing bush where they say the magic chant and each fire one shot in the air, and that will summon the invisible swordsman.
This for me is like, this movie takes such a hard left turn.
Yeah.
From like being at least slightly grounded in reality,
mm-hmm,
to then it takes this turn where it's just completely nonsensical. Like, you have this supernatural aspect that really doesn't ultimately add anything to the movie.
Zero. Yeah.
So, like, why? If I could speak to John Landis, I would ask, why did you put this in? Like, why? I read somewhere that there's, like, a whole other story involving Fran Drescher.
Yeah, that was completely cut.
Yeah, that was completely cut from this movie. So I'm wondering, what was the thought process of leaving this, yeah, this in?
But it's not even just John Landis. It's like, okay, Steve Martin, Lorne Michaels, and Randy Newman.
Yeah.
What is the point? And the other thing is, like, this sounds like it's supposed to be this legend of the Invisible Swordsman. Why is he pointing the way to El Guapo's compound?
Yeah. Like, El Guapo's just a guy.
Yeah, I could understand if this was pointing away to some, like, hidden treasure or something. That would make sense. Why is it pointing to El Guapo? The legend seems older than that.
Yeah, it's like it's almost like they wanted to borrow a little bit of Monty Python,
yeah,
element,
in a way,
and throw it into this movie.
Mm-hmm. And then it's time to turn in, so they sing a song to help calm Ned down because he's never slept outside before. And this is where it gets extra silly because all the animals gather around and join in.
Including a turtle.
Including a turtle.
Which I don't understand why there's a turtle in the desert.
Good night, Ned. Well, it's a tortoise.
I always thought tortoises and turtles, like, lived next to water. Mostly water creatures.
Tortoises are land dwelling.
Okay.
Yeah, turtles are the ones that like water.
I've learned, yeah, something today.
And it has something to do with how their shells are connected to their bodies or something like that. And yeah. But yeah, and he even says goodnight, Ned. I don't know, though, if you remember the Family Guy episode where they end up sitting around a campfire singing this song.
No.
And all the animals in that start singing as well. They bring in some of the Family Guy favorites, like the ostrich and stuff like that.
Nice. I just started watching Family Guy on Disney Plus now that they have the entire thing. So
yeah, yeah, and Futurama.
When I get to it, I'll think of this episode.
So the silliness continues the next day. It is super hot and they are all sweating and they all pull out their canteens, which Lucky only has a couple drops left. Ned's is full of sand and Dusty's is impossibly full. And then he like throws it over his shoulder and it's still draining and they're, yeah, just staring at him and it's lip balm. Like, just silly, silly jokes. This is the gorilla on the train in Trading Places. That's what this is.
Yeah, I like that. I wanted to, like, kudos to Martin Short for just taking, like, a complete mouthful of whatever that was.
Yeah.
Like, that's a real commitment.
Yeah, because even if it's something edible instead of plain sand, like, if that's, like, a mouthful of, like, brown sugar or something like that, it's still, that's a lot to get in your mouth there.
Yeah.
And so they find the singing bush, singing She'll Be Coming Round the Mountain, and other open source musical numbers. I just love the whole bit, though, where it's like, excuse me, are you the singing bush? Like, they're trying to get his attention. are you the singing bush? It's like, are you fucking stupid? Like, what other... Anyway, it's time to summon the Invisible Swordsman, and they need to chant and shoot up in the air. Dusty shoots the Invisible Swordsman because he doesn't fire it up. We both fired up. And I do like the Invisible Swordsman effect.
Yeah, I love that. That was awesome.
I wonder how they did that. Because, and like, when he lifts up the guy's hand and lets it drop again, and there's another puff of dirt. But I want to know how they did that one.
Yeah.
But they see the airplane again and just decide to follow that instead. You know, so all these other plot points, completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
Because they could have just had the plane turn up a whole lot earlier.
There you go.
And then we get back to El Guapo's compound, and piñatas are being set up for El Guapo's birthday. And Colin, normally I only do this when we have guests, but I love this exchange so much, and it's one of the only ones where it's two people instead of three. So I think we need to do a little I Used to Like This One Piece theater. So yeah, this is the plethora scene, and I've always loved the plethora scene. I don't know, who do you want to be? Do you want to be Jefe, or do you want to be El Guapo? I was thinking you'd be a good El Guapo.
Alright, I'll do El Guapo, sure.
Okay, now I'm wondering how dangerous this is, because it's so easy for me to slip into some sort of Mexican cadence here. But
yeah, I was going to say, what stands are we taking on accents?
I'm just going to see how it comes out.
I think I might lean Russian. You can't be offensive with Russian.
Yeah, or we could go cowboy.
Yeah. How many pin? Yeah, we could just do the old Oklahoma.
Okay, sure. Let's go. Yeah, let's pretend this is taking place in New Mexico. We have many beautiful pinatas for your birthday celebration, each one filled with little surprises.
How many pinatas?
Many pinatas, many.
Jefe, would you say I have a plethora of pinatas?
A what?
A plethora.
Oh yes, El Guapo. Yeah, you have a plethora.
Jefe, what is a plethora?
Why, El Guapo?
Well, you just told me that I had a plethora. And I would just like to know if you know what it means to have a plethora. I would not like to think that someone would tell me someone else he has a plethora, and then find out that that person has no idea what it means to have a plethora.
El Guapo, I know that I, Jefe, do not have your superior intellect and education, but could it be that once again you are angry at something else and are looking to take it out on me?
Ah, Jefe. You do not understand women. You no. Hold on. I went into my.
Yeah, because it's the when you take the woman, you got yeah, when you want the woman. Woman. Yeah. Yeah.
Ah, Jefe, you do not understand women. You cannot force open the petals of a flower. When the flower is ready, it opens itself up to you.
So when do you think Carmen will open up her flower to you?
Tonight, or I will kill her.
Yes! I used to like this One Piece theater.
There we go. And it was really, really hard to not fall into that like, I don't know what you call it, that like gringo.
Mm-hmm. So, one question I have is, they say that it's his 40th birthday. 40?
that's a hard-lived 40.
like, later they even try to pass it off at 33. But, like, the actor was 54.
Like, yeah, I was gonna say, he looks like, I was gonna guess, like, 55 to, like, maybe 60.
Yeah. And also, at this party, how are they supposed to hit any of those piñatas? They're like 30 feet in the air.
So far in the air.
Are they just decorative piñatas?
Well, maybe at like the end of the party, they lower it and then they all come down with the bats and like smash them open.
Maybe. Okay. They're just not at that part of the party yet.
I did want to say that El Guapo, for the longest time watching this movie, I was certain that was John Glover.
Oh, from, like, yeah. Like,
Lionel Luthor from Smallville. They look very similar.
He definitely does have that going on. So, just before the party, this is when the German arrives with guns for El Guapo, and I love the moment of El Guapo testing the guns. What's his name up there? Paco. Paco, hold up your hat. Higher. And then he shoots Paco. And everyone just starts shooting in the air. There's so much shooting in the air in this movie. Like, what goes up must come down, people.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the Brad Pitt movie The Mexican?
No.
Okay, because in the movie, someone dies from a bullet that was shot in the air and just happens to hit him in the head.
Okay.
Like, and in a few minutes when Ned is above them, like, how does he not get hit? Because they're always just shooting their guns in the air.
I remember that was, like, always a dangerous game that kids used to play with lawn darts. That's the reason why you can't buy metal lawn darts anymore, because
yeah.
You'd just stand in a circle and hawk one right straight up in the air, and then everybody would just run for their
lives. So meanwhile, the amigos have found the compound. We'll have to figure out a way in. They've got to get one of the guards out of the way, so Dusty throws a rock at him, and they climb the wall to sneak in, and then using the pinatas to swing. And when you said in the beginning that they were competent,
yeah
I automatically thought of this scene, though. Because, somehow Dusty ends up in Carmen's room. Ned ends up getting stuck over top of everyone, and Lucky's rope is too long, and he ends up on the ground with everyone holding a gun on him. I'm not actually sure where they were trying to swing to, though. Like, that's the other thing I'm never 100% clear on, because, like, they've misjudged these ropes so much, but where were they actually trying to get to? Was Dusty actually on target?
That seems hard to believe. But yeah, I'm not sure either.
But I love when Lucky hops up off the ground and everyone like is pointing a gun at him, and he goes, "Seize him!"
Yeah.
But he has three demands: one, that you stop harassing the people of Santa Poco; two, that the land of all Mexico be redistributed equally among the people, and a proportional system of government be established consisting of three separate but equal branches, the legislative, the executive, and the judicial. I had to write that one down, because he just goes on and on. And then three, that the girl Carmen be returned to me, unharmed. But they take him away. So now comes the part where a lot of stuff is simultaneously happening. Lucky gets taken to jail in the basement, where, for some reason, the shackles are attached to weights in a whole pulley system. Why aren't these fastened to the wall?
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what, if it's almost meant to be some sort of weird torture device,
mm-hmm.
where like the means of your freedom is within reach, but you have to be willing to manage all the levers and the pull of the chains to get there.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me recently, my wife and I have been watching multiple seasons of MTV's The Challenge, which is a reality game show of former casts of The Real World and Road Rules and that kind of stuff. But okay. A lot of the challenges they do are like that, where they're like strapped to bungee cords and they have to like make it to one end of the thing before their partner and that kind of stuff. And when I was watching that scene with Steve Martin, I kind of felt like that would be a good that'd be a good competition for somebody to have to endure.
Well, yes, and of course you do also have to make sure that it is tempting to escape by dropping the keys at the edge of the cell, like the bad guys do here. You know, they're trying to taunt him, but go figure, they left him chained to chains that move.
Yeah.
So Dusty, meanwhile, is rescuing Carmen. And I love the lines about the plan. Step one is break in and find Carmen. Well, what's step two? Really, we didn't expect the first part of the plan to work, so we have no further plan. But they get out of there, and Dusty can't bring himself to knock out the guard, so Carmen does it. And then Dusty dresses in the clothes to disguise himself. In the courtyard of the compound, the gang starts drinking toasts to El Guapo, and the boys all chipped in to get him a sweater. And El Guapo, in turn, starts reminiscing with the boys. And Dusty, in his disguise, gets caught in this moment, pretending to be Jose. But El Guapo takes a little too long to catch onto the ruse.
That was one of my favorite scenes, when he's like, I can't remember what he calls it, but he's like, "And you, we!" And then he keeps feeding him things. Like, it's like, "We raped the horses." And it's like, "Yeah, and then we rode out on the women."
So yes, it's who the hell are you? What's happening around here today? Are gringos falling from the sky? And that's when Ned falls. Perfectly timed entrance of Ned. And then Jefe gets the great line of, "Yes, El Guapo." But as you mentioned earlier, the German now recognizes Ned Niederlander, his favorite star of the silver screen. It was the man who inspired the German to learn the art of the quick draw. But then he learned about movie trick photography. But Ned insists he's actually that fast, and so they decide that, as you Americans say, we'll play for keeps. And they give him the manly hand cannon. The physical comedy with that gun.
Yeah, beauty.
So funny. And, like, the fact that it's not just showing that Ned's a wimp, like, when Lucky catches the gun also, like, the first thing he does is, like, drop his hand to the ground. Like, it's...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. That it was such great physical comedy of him trying to get it in the holster, because we don't want to die with a little sissy gun like his.
No.
And so Lucky comes across the scene as they're lined up for the duel. Ned is in fact faster, but the kick from the gun sends him flying backwards, with the gun flying in the air, with where Lucky catches it with his hilarious physical comedy. But he points it at El Guapo and says, "I'll fill you so full of lead you'll be using your dick as a pencil." And so, keeping the bad guys at gunpoint, they escape on horses, and then they come across the plane, and Ned thinks he can fly it because he watched his stuntman in Little Neddy Goes to War closely.
Yeah.
And it's a race to Santa Poco. Plane versus horses. Now, I will say with this plane, the wheels on the plane, when they get off of the plane in Santa Poco, are completely different than the ones that we saw buzzing El Guapo. It's clearly it's clearly two very different planes. Because one of them has like a framework type wheel, whatever. I'm obviously an aerospace engineer here, right? But but it's like the wheels are solid and filled in though on the plane that
they're fixed.
Yeah. Yeah, they get off in Santa Poco. And they are trying to rally the town to help them fight El Guapo. I love the speech about everyone having their own personal El Guapo. for some people, you know, unemployment is their El Guapo or something like that.
Well, I mean, El Guapo translates to the tough one, so
yeah,
maybe we do all have our own El Guapo.
Okay, see, I thought I read somewhere that El Guapo translated to the handsome one, so that must have been a mistake somewhere that I saw.
Or I googled. My Google was wrong.
Alexa, what does El Guapo translate into in English?
Sorry, I don't know.
Oh, of course not. Guapo, handsome. No, it's handsome one. Alexa failed me, but my phone didn't.
Sorry, I don't.
Shut up! Alexa, shut up. Anyway, but yes, I love this speech though how for us El Guapo is a big dangerous guy who wants to kill us. but they can conquer their own personal El Guapo, who just so happens to be the real El Guapo. It's a great speech. And so they can turn their skills against El Guapo now. And what is it that this town does really well? Well, we can sew. So it's remember what we did in the movie Amigos, Amigos, Amigos? Do you think it'll work? It's got to. And so the town is sewing like crazy, and the ones who aren't are digging a hole. What movie was it that we did not too long ago where I said it's kind of like the ending of Three Amigos? Do you remember?
Trading?
No.
No. I don't remember.
Yeah, neither do I. Oh, Sister Act.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, in Sister Act, where I said playing the shell game. This is the scene I was referring to in this movie. So El Guapo arrives and the town looks deserted. Yoo-hoo, where are you? But then the amigos start shooting. But wait, now they're over there, El Guapo. There's amigos everywhere. And I mean, this is one where they did too many close-ups for this scene. Yeah. Like, I understand what they were going for. Like, but they needed to do more long distance shots, because there's so many scenes where it's obviously them there and obviously them impossibly over there.
Yeah.
It would have been more effective if they had done more long shots.
Well, I mean, it's also hilarious because when it's all said and done and you see the costumes that the townspeople created, they're nowhere near as like bedazzled as the actual Three Amigos costumes.
So basic. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they lure him into a trap. All of El Guapo's men run away. Only Jefe sticks around, but he gets killed immediately. Now El Guapo is alone, and he gets shot. And the whole town is dressed like amigos, but like you said, not very convincingly dressed like amigos.
Yeah.
But El Guapo says, "That was some good trick." And then he shoots Lucky in the foot. And that was a good trick, too. And then that is also never mentioned again. So he's been shot in the arm and the foot, but he doesn't walk with a limp. He isn't favoring his one arm.
He's just impervious. It's because it's like 1916 bullets. They're just like those little Like those round shots or whatever they were.
The kind that you had to stuff into the barrel of the gun with the stick?
Yeah.
The three amigos are taking off now. Pablo says he's going to miss Mr. Dusty, and Dusty gives him his watch. They are men without homes. They were meant to wander. And they all get kisses goodbye. And so Lucky tells Carmen, I'll come back one day. She says, why? So, like, her stupidness has returned. Because it takes her way too long to figure out what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And then the hottest woman kisses Ned much more passionately. I forget what her name is. It's Rebecca something, but I looked it up. She's an ex-Playboy playmate.
Oh, that makes sense.
I went above and beyond for this show. I did a little extra research, and her centerfold pictures were quite tasteful, except maybe the one where she's naked on a horse. That one might have been a little bit too far, but everything else was done tastefully. Artistic.
I'm glad for her.
And so the town gives them all the money they have, but Ned says, I'll take care of that, and then lives up to the nobility they show in their films. Our reward is that justice has been done. And they ride off into the sunset. The end. And that is Three Amigos.
Nice. This is a good ending. I did think to myself, where are they riding to?
Mm-hmm.
Like, where are you? Do you even know? They're clearly directionally challenged. Do they even know where they're heading to or going? Or they just? I almost felt like there needed to be a scene where they come back and are kind of like, "Hey, can you guys give us directions to where we need to get to?"
Yeah, if they hadn't killed the invisible swordsman, there could have been a lot more adventures for the three of them. There could have been sequels.
Yeah, that's like that's actually one of the crazy things about this movie and just about that time. Like, I feel like nowadays we take sequels for granted.
Yeah.
Like, anytime you watch a movie that's even moderately good, you're like, oh, there's going to be a sequel.
Yeah.
But in the 80s and 90s, it was a movie had to be exceptional to get a sequel. And I feel like if Three Amigos had been made now, it would have had at a minimum of three sequels.
Probably.
Because you could have just went and did every single one of their... You could have either kept them as, like, the Three Amigos proper, where they're the fighting outlaws and that kind of stuff, or you could have done the one... I mean, the one poster they had was, like, the Three Amigos at Sea or whatever, which looked like it was some kind of pirate or sailing movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's... it didn't do well at the box office, though, so that probably decided its fate right there no matter what.
Yeah, that's fair.
But on IMDb, it scored a 6.5 out of 10. It has a Metascore of 52. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 45% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 67. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like Carmen pistol whipping a guard, hit us with some reviews.
All right. What do I have here? All right, our first reviewer, I went to the audience for this one. It was kind of difficult. The critics' ones were obviously a little bit more, there were some good ones, but there was a lot of bad, and they were called just kind of like, it just seems like people didn't get it. So, I mean, that's not my favorite type of review. So I went to the audience for these. So Ben E. gives it 4 out of 5 stars. He says, classic, enduring, uplifting, fantastically quotable, an old favorite for a number of my friends, and today my teen son greatly enjoyed it. I forgot how fun the music is in this film. It is silly, of course, but I don't know how the critics of the day failed to get in sync with it.
What were the enduring? What were the first few words that he used?
He said classic, enduring, uh-huh, uplifting, and fantastically quotable.
Okay, I was just trying to. I wanted to hear the letters again. I was wondering whether he was trying to spell something out there with. His word choices.
John Jay gave it 4 out of 5 stars as well, and I really enjoyed this review. He says, first time you watch it, well, it is awful. Not too much like your first beer. But like beer, you find yourself consuming it again and again until it becomes one of your favorite things in the world.
Nice.
An unnamed user gave it 5 out of 5 stars, but actually says 6 stars. Beyond explanation are the heights of comedic genius this rises to. Watching this movie is a spiritual experience every time, and honestly should be mandatory viewing for every man, woman, and child on this planet. This movie is infamous. Also, the male planes in this movie have bigger balls than all the rest. And then the last one I have is Michael M., 5 out of 5 stars, says, they should have called this movie Three Kings, because Steve Martin, Chevy Chase, and Martin Short are practically knights at the round table of comedy, as they should be. Some amazing gags in this movie. Very happy to have picked this up on Blu-ray. Go back and watch it again if it's been a while. You won't be disappointed.
You know, something that's interesting about that, though, is, like, I had read that originally it was supposed to be Steve Martin, Dan Aykroyd, and John Belushi. Those were the original three stars attached to this picture. So it's just interesting that what a different, you know, would those have been the three kings then as well? Like, you know, this was a really good partnership, I feel like. Like, I thought that the three actors worked well off of each other. And I do wonder what it would have been like the other, you know, with those other two instead. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, is that all the reviews?
Yeah, that's it. Sorry.
Okay.
That is all the reviews I have for this one.
I was too busy dealing with my dog that I wasn't sure whether you had said something at the end there.
No worries.
Yeah, so watching this movie again, I still loved it. Like, I still found it quite funny. I almost wish that this had been what Blazing Saddles was.
Yeah, that's a good... I was going to say, that's kind of what I took away from it as well. When I first started watching that, I was just like, oh no, is Sean... led me down the path of another Blazing Saddles. But not quite.
Yeah, I thought that everyone was funny. It is weird watching something like this in retrospect, where now you hear about what an asshole Chevy Chase is, allegedly. I better say allegedly for legal reasons or something. But, you know, it's interesting looking at it with those eyes. It's almost like if I were to pop in an episode of The Cosby Show and be like, oh man, but if I only knew then what I know now, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just, but that being said, I do feel like Chevy Chase was one of the weaker parts of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's just because I've heard things about him nowadays. I found him the least funny of all three of them. But I thought that they all put on great performances, and the movie definitely gets nonsensical. And as a kid, that would have been what I loved about it, was the weird tangent it takes from the campfire on.
Yeah.
But it is interesting to watch it now thinking that, okay, it's silly, but I like everything else that's surrounding it. And thankfully, the weird John Landis tangent that it took wasn't very long in the whole grand scheme of things, because the rest of the story I thought was a lot of fun. So
yeah.
So me personally, I can get behind those mid-60s that the audience has given it, but you know, what about you? This is your first viewing.
Yeah, I definitely liked it more than I expected to. I would agree with you on Chevy Chase. It's kind of funny to watch, like I was a big Community fan.
Yeah.
Not a real big fan of him and that, like, of that character. But then to watch this movie, it's like, it's almost the same. It's just that in Community he's older and it's maybe just a little bit more sad, but it's still, I realized, like, oh, Chevy Chase has been doing this kind of, this style of comedy for a long time, but comedy has clearly changed. And so yeah. maybe that is why, like, there was some of that conflict.
Yeah, I mean, like, the one thing about Dusty is he's a little less racist than Pierce Hawthorne.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
he wasn't written Pierce lines. That's...
No.
But, yeah, I see what you mean.
But it's still, like, a lot of his lines are just those throwaway, like, oh, I get it, you're just a dumb guy.
Yeah,
you're just a dumb guy, like...
The tacos, and, the whole taco kind of stuff. Yeah.
But it's funny because I read a thing that said that Chevy Chase said this movie was the most fun he's ever had.
Okay.
So, I mean, good for him on that. I thought Steve Martin was good, but for whatever reason, I was constantly drawn to Martin Short.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one that took most of my attention. Like we talked about at the top of the show, my biggest takeaway was the music.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed all the songs and that, like all the musical stuff. Especially, I really liked the My Little Buttercup and the I love the song at the top, like the Three Amigos song that they sing, mm-hmm. and then the one that they sing around the campfire as well is really good. But yeah, I thought it was funny. I thought, like I said, I liked it more than I'd expected to, for sure. But at the same time, it's not like a movie that I feel like I would run back to and like or rave about.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's one of those movies that I'm glad I watched it, is probably the best that I can say about it.
Yeah.
And I would recommend people watch it at least one time because it's worthwhile. So, yeah, I'd probably follow the same as you, like, in that mid-60 range.
Well, and you have a new dad joke that you're going to be able to drop into conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, there we go. That is Three Amigos, and that's our show for this week. If you like that show, oh boy, one thing you can do for us that would really help out is to share our posts, tell your friends. Word of mouth really helps out a podcast. There's a billion and a half podcasts out there, and we just want to get noticed. So another thing you could do to help us out on the business end is, if you want to go above and beyond just word of mouth, is go to whatever app it is you listen to your podcast on and give us 5 stars. Doesn't matter what you say, but it's those 5 stars that just help drive us up the charts and help us get noticed.
And be sure to check out our website, www.iselectthisone.com. There you can find links to all our podcast episodes as well as our social media. We have Facebook, we have Twitter, we have Instagram. Go check out all our funny memes. Like, comment, share our posts. Also, if you want to get in touch with us, we do have an email address. You can email us at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com. If you want to let us know what you love about the show, let us know what you hate about the show. If you just want to, I don't know, please don't send me any, like, weird pictures or, keep it PG. Keep it positive.
I love how you say send me some weird pictures, where it's usually me opening the emails. Yeah.
That's true. Sean has done a lot of R-rated research when it comes to this show, so he might enjoy, if you want to send him some beyond PG things, he will most likely be the one opening it, so feel free.
And if you would like to be a producer of the show and donate to us, you can go to patreon.com/iusedtolikethisone and become part of our Patreon community. I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening. And join us next week when we take a look at Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Yes, I can't wait.
On I Used to Like This One.